COVID-19 cases continue to rise around the U.S., and that means hospital beds are filling up again. With health systems at or near full capacity in many communities, some are being forced to plan for potentially rationing medical care like they did in the early days of the pandemic. This time, there's a new question being considered, whether it's ethical to make unvaccinated people a lower priority when a hospital has maxed out its resources. This doesn't seem to be happening, at least not yet. One health system had an internal email raising the question. There have been newspaper editorials, though, calling for that change. Our next guest says it would be the wrong move. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the medical community should consider when deciding whose treatment is a higher priority when hospital resources may be overwhelmed? How would you feel if an unvaccinated loved one was turned away or moved down on the list for medical treatment? Or if a vaccinated loved one couldn't get life-saving care for a non-COVID-related condition, for example, because local hospital beds were full with unvaccinated COVID-19 patients? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Tiffany Green is an economist who teaches in the departments of population health sciences and obstetrics and gynecology at UW-Madison. She wrote a recent op-ed for the Wisconsin Examiner titled, "Punishing the Unvaccinated is the Wrong Medicine for COVID-19. Tiffany, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Can you start by talking about just situations when hospitals might have to start deciding who gets care and who doesn't when they're overwhelmed by something like COVID-19?
Yeah, so as we're seeing in the news, hospitals are filling up quickly. There are many places where hospitals just are running out of ICU beds, in large part because we don't just have COVID, we also have other conditions for which people also need to go to the ICU. And unfortunately, there are times when we don't have what we need, or we're getting perilously close to it.
And as I mentioned, the idea has been at least floated, not so much, I think, within the medical world, but by some outside, saying we don't want our resources tied up for that person having a heart attack or a gallbladder attack or you name it, by a person who made a decision not to be vaccinated. You're worried about that, though, as you wrote in that piece in the Wisconsin Examiner. Why do you think that's the wrong road to pursue?
I'm worried about it because people who should probably know a little better are saying these kinds of things, you know, rumblings on the internet. And I'm surprised because while it feels good, I can understand how, you know, you can have a bit of schadenfreude, you know, when people who are publicly anti-vax rail against COVID and they end up getting COVID and getting very sick or worse. So it's understandable, right? But I think that we see the world in black and white, and we want to believe that this decision to get vaccinated is this very simple individual level decision, and it's simply not, right? We, as I talk about in the op-ed, there are so many reasons why people don't have vaccines, and it's not just because they don't want to get one.
And let's get into that now a little bit. Who are you seeing who's unvaccinated, but not necessarily because they're anti-vaccine? What are some of the obstacles they may face?
And, you know, I just want to talk a little bit. I usually don't do this, but I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal experience.
Sure.
As you might imagine, I think I'm pretty good at doing research and finding resources. But I can tell you that the only reason that I got my vaccine as early as I did is because another PhD-educated friend told me about where to go on Facebook. And in that group, I was able to find resources to get to luckily get in somewhere sooner because of that, right? And I thought about that and I said, man, I can only imagine how people that don't have ready access to the internet, that don't have friends to tell them where to go, might not find it as easy as we think. And so while we don't have that same rush on vaccines that we had before, we still have a lot of factors that determine or make it harder for people to get vaccines. I have a car, but a lot of people don't have cars. And if there are only certain times when vaccines are being offered, then it's hard to do that if you have to work, right? Or you have to use public transportation, which is highly inconvenient, or you don't have a job with flexible work hours. Another important aspect that we're not talking about is a connection between our social safety net and vaccination. So we think, oh, people don't want to get vaccinations because they don't want to suffer the side effects. Well, as most of you who have taken the vaccine know, at least my experience was, I got knocked out for at least a full day after that second dose. It was very temporary, but I have the ability to stay at home from work, right? If you don't have a job that has sick leave, as many people who work jobs don't, then you don't have time to suffer the effects of the second vaccine, the second shot.
I don't usually share my personal experience either, but I also got laid up for a day, and I was thinking about, glad I could be off work for a day. Glad my kids are old enough to take care of themselves too. Is that the childcare issue part of the obstacle here for someone who doesn't want to risk being laid up for that day to take care of maybe infant kids instead of advanced teenage kids where I was?
I mean, I think, you know, I have colleagues that have been talking about this for a long time, but the pandemic has truly laid bare how work is gendered in this country. Every academic mother I know, and not just mothers, fathers too, but we could see, you know, it's always, you know, the challenges with finding childcare, the challenges of, you know, somebody being quarantined and having to take care of kids at home and work at the same time. It is a lot. And the expectation that someone be able to take off of work while still having to deal with childcare is really enormous. And, you know, all of this is not to say that no one is ever responsible for their decisions. But I'm arguing in this op-ed that these decisions do not occur in a vacuum. And if we really want to get at the underlying roots of this, of the under-vaccination or non-vaccination of a wide swath of the U.S. population, we have to look at the structural factors that are driving it.
We're talking to Tiffany Green from UW-Madison's Departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology. She's with us today to talk about the ethics of moving unvaccinated people down on the priority list as hospital beds again start to fill up across the country. Healthcare workers confront the need, in some cases, to ration healthcare resources. Our guest says that's not a good decision to make, moving them down on the priority list because of their vaccination status. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Do you think the medical community should consider vaccination status when they have to triage who gets care when they're getting overwhelmed? Do you have questions? Do you work in healthcare yourself? Love to hear your thoughts. At 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation and take your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about rationing medical care as COVID-19 cases grow across the country and whether healthcare professionals consider a person's vaccination status when deciding who gets care and who doesn't, who's where on the priority list when hospitals get overwhelmed. Tiffany Green stays with us from UW-Madison's Departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with Pat on the line in Three Lakes. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I feel this way about it. If you don't get the vaccine because of religious purposes or because of health purposes, you should be prioritized the same as the person that's got the vaccine. But I've seen a whole bunch of people in this community and other communities that don't get the vaccine because of political purposes. Now, if you have somebody that comes in and they got the vaccine and they had this, you know, sometimes it's difficult to get it. And somebody that says, hell with it, because I don't believe in it, because I'm I'm whatever you are, political persuasion. Why should you treat those two people the same?
Pat, thanks for the call. Tiffany, what would you say to Pat?
I would say to Pat that I understand how he feels. It's really frustrating as you know, folks who we've sacrificed quite a lot during this pandemic. We've gone on lockdowns. We've gotten the vaccine and still we can't get out of it. And it's in large part due to both people that can't get vaccinated, like our children, and people that on the surface have chosen not to be vaccinated. But what I would say is that goes down a dangerous route. For example, Pat talked about people who have religious objections. But some might say, well, why are religious objections different from political objections, right? That's, you know, it's a dangerous road to go down. And I also think that, you know, as I say in the article, when we think on the surface that it's going to be it's a fair thing, But even in the beginning of the pandemic during COVID, we started the thought was to triage people that were at risk for poor outcomes. And that ended up being disabled people, older adults, right? Somebody could argue, well, somebody is unvaccinated, but they might do better than an older adult with a vaccine. So what I'm saying is not that people are not responsible for their choices, but that we take a really broad view of the unintended consequences of doing something that we think is fair.
Thanks a lot for the call, Pat. We'll go to Stephen now in Milwaukee. Stephen, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my question is, and you just kind of alluded to this, but I would counter this argument with, you know, this isn't very different than patients that are on a transplant list. So there's certain patients that are just ineligible due to maybe disability or other issues for transplants, as there's a limited amount of resources and there's more patients than there is resources. So, you know, we're entering this era or this time in the pandemic where we have less resources than we do sick patients. So how is that different?
Stephen, thanks for the call. And I hear, and I'm not no expert on this, but I hear, you know, with a liver transplant, that person who drinks alcohol and won't stop knocks themselves off the list, or at least way down the list. Tiffany, is that a valid comparison?
No, I don't think it is. I don't do transplant research, but I can tell you from having the good fortune of having colleagues that are engaged in this space, is that you see a lot of inequities, you know, come into the transplant space as well. People that are low SES having less access to foods that are consistent with maintaining good kidney health. You know, Black and other people of color are less likely to have living donors, which is again more consistent with a long life of the kidney. All I'm saying is that these aren't individual level behaviors. You know, people act in individual level ways, but the environment is what shapes our choices. And it's very easy to say, well, I made these choices, why can't they? But if you read the article, I do discuss a lot of the reasons why these choices aren't individual. And I also would argue that a lot of disabled people took great exception to being deprioritized, as they should have, as if their lives were less valuable because they were disabled. I think that's ableist, and it's problematic, and it's inconsistent with having a society where we value all of our members reaching their highest potential.
Stephen, thanks for that call. We're talking to Tiffany Green, researcher at UW-Madison, looking at how hospitals allocate resources when they get overwhelmed by COVID. The idea floated, not in practice anywhere that I know of, saying should unvaccinated people be bumped down on the priority list. Back to your calls now. Eric is with us in Kaukauna. Eric, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Eric?
Well, I just think that, you know, they shouldn't really discriminate on how, you know, people that aren't vaccinated, because they might have religious beliefs, they might have personal beliefs, you know. And, you know, I guess part of the reason I'm not really too into it is the government backs it, so you can't even sue them if it hurts you in the long run. So I think that bothers a lot of people too. You know, I mean, I don't think that you should have just a group of people that pick and discriminate, because, I mean, as far as our society is going, we're trying to eliminate discrimination, and now you're letting certain groups of people that are probably the ones that were the ones that discriminated before.
Eric, thanks for the call. Tiffany, you get into some of this, you know, people who are in some ways victims of misinformation, and that's why they didn't get the vaccine. You have sympathy for them that some people have written op-eds don't.
Yeah, and I have to be honest, I had to dig deep. I don't want your listeners to think that I am not sympathetic to their points of view. I have small children that are too young to be vaccinated, and I am afraid for them and other people's children every day. I want to make that clear. And I do think that we all have a responsibility to get vaccinated for those of us who cannot. You know, this is infectious disease is not something that we can drive by individual level decision making. I think that policy approach has been really problematic, and as we've seen, very ineffective in getting people to get vaccinated. But I would say, in the short time that we have left, that we can't expect people to just accept the COVID vaccine when we've allowed the anti-vax movement to thrive and to flourish for many years. You don't just erase that kind of misinformation. You don't allow misinformation to thrive on social media and then expect obviously you should get the vaccine. Well, to some people, it's not obvious, and put on top of that, the way this vaccine has been politicized. And I think as scholars, we have not always been as diligent as we could be in educating people about the scientific process, which people are seeing play out in real time. I can understand why some people would still have doubts. It doesn't mean they shouldn't be vaccinated, but that we have to have a long-term strategy for addressing disinformation on the internet and elsewhere, and doing the work that some people are doing in the communities to one by one to answer questions and encourage people to get vaccinated. That's not a short-term strategy, and it's hard because the house is on fire now. But I think that we really have to buckle down and address this long term, because the next pandemic will certainly come, particularly given all that's going on with the climate.
Tiffany, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Tiffany Green, an economist who teaches in the departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology at UW-Madison. She was with us today to talk about whether it's right to consider if someone is vaccinated or not against coronavirus as hospital beds fill up and health systems contend with deciding who gets care and who doesn't. Her recent op-ed on this for the Wisconsin Examiner is titled, "Punishing the Unvaccinated is the Wrong Medicine for COVID-19." You can find it linked at WPR.org/Central Time.